Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. The family is off doing a pre-holiday shopping run, and I'm looking forward to having a bit of time off next week. Go camping with the family and get away for a bit. So really looking forward to that.
Nice. So just as a language and culture correction, when you say holiday, you mean vacation for U.S. people.
Sure. Yeah, I guess. Okay, yeah. Both of those things is kind of how we describe them up here. But yeah, I'm taking time off of work, not time like a statutory holiday to go away with the family.
Okay. Okay. Because I think I remember hearing, I think people like in Europe often call it holiday as well. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, I'm not saying it's just like a Canadian only thing, but I think in at least as far as I know from people I interact with in the States, like when people tell me holiday, I usually think of like more literal holidays, but now also yes, calendar or religious or whatever. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean government holiday. Like we have our 4th of July is next week. I know Canada Day is a different time. Right. Like
We got July 1st. So we're the start of the week.
Right. So so you could have meant both things actually. That's for next week, right? It actually is both. But if you were to just take a trip, like I never say holiday for that for me.
So, interesting. Anyway, we have this fun thing with the Europeans where we say holidays and they say holiday. Right. They're just like, I'm going on holiday. And we are like, where's the S? You know, but yeah, so many different regional differences there. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. It's funny. I think this is the only time we've talked every week. So we have shifted our recording schedule around due to holidays. You're having your holiday next week. I'm having a, in your words, holiday the week after. So it's kind of messed with our every other schedule. So this might be the first time in a really long time we've talked every week. So the past 3 recordings, including this one, or actually the last 2 recordings have been on Fridays the past 2 weeks. I am now cautioned to repeat myself on what's going on lately, which maybe I'll just punt on this one. I will say this one thing, summer. And from a business perspective, we see this every year in cycles, like summers. We call it our summer slow for Referral Rock. Right. Because a lot of the people are, I think, in large, people are more distracted in the summertime in U.S., you know, whether it means your boss is going on vacation or your coworkers are on vacation. So everything, I think, slows down a little bit. We've noticed it on our buying cycles, like, you know, less demo requests, less like sales take longer because they have to talk to a manager that isn't there. Priorities are, everything's just a little slower and it's fine. The point I wanted to make is when this first started happening years ago, it was like existential feeling, right? Like, my gosh, we were getting 10 leads a week and now they're 5 or 6. What did I screw up? What's going wrong? Like all these other things. And I guess my point is, with the reps doing, seeing it every summer, I don't panic nearly as much, I would say, or I don't go have a gut check with that. So it's just sort of, and this happens too, like spring break time, there's always these weird little things, and you'll notice them just on holidays. I think you and I both know when you look at, you know, let's say SEO traffic data, it's like easy to see, weekends, it's down, holidays, it's down. So it's not something I did that something I screwed up or something that is not, it is a trend and it is a sort of a, I would say a macro thing, not a micro thing that is me.
Yeah. I definitely noticed that too in my consulting too. It's like, you know, fall and spring are like the big times. And like, other than that, like, summer and like, you know, Christmas break is like real quiet. Both of those times. You know,
right.
And I think for all the reasons you mentioned, it's nice to have some reps so you're not freaking out, right? But definitely some ups and downs.
Right. And I'm sure other businesses have different patterns of who you're selling to or attention. Maybe like consumer you know, more D2C or e-commerce, you know, mm-hmm. could be like evenings may pick up and weekends may pick up when people aren't, you know, yep. potentially working. So like they might see different patterns, right? And also like Black Friday, like we don't see anything related to Black Friday at all, like, you right, know, yeah. in terms of, or holiday, talking about.
Yeah, I definitely see that too. Q1, definitely there's a bunch of people, you know, pushing to get their projects done. And then same with Q4, you know, trying to get them done before the end of the year. It's interesting, people trying to meet their targets. I have one client too. It's got a in-store offering and that I manage. Mm-hmm. And so that really picks up in the summer, which is kind of neat. So we have time
summer projects.
So we have like slow time in the fall and in winter. And so that's a great time for doing training and, you know, kind of some R&D stuff. And then the summer is more like, you know, hunker down and just get the production bugs sorted out. Just a totally different cycle for that particular.
It almost feels like they're cyclical, right? Like if your work time, like your business, you know, your own work, mm-hmm. what you do for a living is busy, then you don't have time for your personal projects or other stuff. Because my guess is you're talking about like some like hardware related mm-hmm. customers like that, mm-hmm. like Home Depots and those types of things, which makes sense to me because I'm doing a like bathroom mm-hmm. project. So like I'm looking more on building sites and I'm looking at, you know, lumber, making more visits to, you know, local hardware store, stuff like that. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's really neat to see those patterns.
Yeah. It's one last thing before we dive into a topic today, but just made me think too, for our audience, like, you know, indie hackers and people that are, I would say, you know, maybe newer potentially to like their own business side versus work, you know, when that flip switches mm-hmm. between working for someone else and working for yourself. And like you said, like having the reps of working for yourself as a business. Mm-hmm. And as much as I think a lot of indie hackers get into this space because they sort of like reject the corporate mm-hmm. stuff, it's also important to remember why certain things happen, like why people do report on Q1, why they compare quarter to quarter, that they don't compare necessarily Q1 to Q2, they compare mm-hmm. Q1 to Q1 last year, because it has those same cyclical cycles that are baked in. So you're not, it's actually almost a bad thing, I think, to compare something like a Q1 versus a Q3, just for the reasons we talked about, right? Like Q1 hit the ground running, like new year, new initiatives, and Q3, like summer slow, right? Like types of stuff. There are some truths in all that stuff that happen, and you shouldn't necessarily reject every corporate ism out there, because they do sort of exist for a reason, but they may not exist for you, but they could.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't have to like it. You just have to know that it exists and, you know, carry on with it.
Right, right. So for the topic, I thought about our last episode, we talked about sort of universal truths and sort of other, I said, bigger truisms to remember that like certain patterns happen, and remembering those outside of yourself, because you might be an exception. To a lot of rules, especially in business, is like thinking about, you know, broader audience truisms and things like that.
Yeah.
So this one isn't as much an audience truism, but it kind of came up from something I've often thought about, and often in my initial starting of like, I would say career and life, didn't really believe in, which is like this one about, is it better to, you know, like work on your strengths, lean into your strengths, or kind of try to spend effort kind of turning your weakness into a strength, types of things.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I've heard this one. Okay. So why, like, should you work on the thing that you're horrible at? So for me, that would be like writing essays. Should I work on learning how to write better essays? Or should I lean into the fact that I can code really well and just, you know, hammer out code and, you know, do that? That's the, right. That's the question.
Yeah. And that's a good example, right? It's a good example that I think a lot of people you know, potentially listening to this could relate to. So yeah, I think that's one of those things. And so yeah, what are your initial thoughts on that?
Well, I guess my thought is, do you really have to pick? Because I think a lot of times you get put into situations where you don't really have an option. Like, for example, like haven't had to write essays in a very long time. And so I never really thought about that. I just kind of did the jobs that were right in front of me. And a lot of those were developer related jobs. And so, you know, kind of worked on those things. And even in my home life too, you know, you just, there's certain things that, yeah, you generally are doing things that are to your strengths, but the odd time, you know, you'll run across something you have to do that's not really to your strength. And then, you know, I had, you know, my essay writing, for example, I've done since high school. And
let's back on the essay writing. Let's actually put it into a little context of like blog posts. So let's turn it into marketing versus,
well, that's where I was getting
versus
to.
Coding. Okay, go ahead.
So my fault. Like, so I was, you know, I really neglected that part of my life and I didn't really work on it at all. And then, you know, I start this status list business and I'm like, hey, I want to, you know, write so that people will come to my website and, you know, learn about me. And so I'm kind of forced into this SEO stuff and learning about how to write content and all of that. And I'm still pretty bad at it. But it's like, well, I have to do this thing if I want to get good at it and like to get people to my site. And or I could pay someone else to do it. And I'm like, well, you know, I probably should just learn how to do this because like otherwise I'm not going to know what's good and what's bad and all that. And, you know, that's kind of how I was forced into learning it. So I don't know if you really have to make a choice.
I mean, I guess I think. Yeah, maybe you don't have to make a choice. I don't know. I guess I never thought of it about a choice. I guess I thought about the circumstances, right? So like you're saying, the circumstance of learning to do more long form writing, like, kind of got pushed upon you because you had a resource constraint. Well, one, I don't want to, if I'm going to be a responsible sort of like business owner, I've got to think about this holistically. Now, I don't have a resource to do it. I don't know enough about what is good or not. So I should at least get good enough. I like how you put that, like, so I know what good is, or at least I know how to even potentially vet a person that could work with me. And I'm not going to get the wool pulled over my eyes per se. Right. Yeah. So like, I think there's a certain, I really like that. It's a different concept I've been thinking about too, which maybe we'll get into, but just on the edge, what you've done essentially is like organically, you've worked on your strengths because one, you probably enjoyed it. So it's sort of, you know, in the past, we've talked about the joy, the need, what was it? The business need, skill and joy, right? Yeah. Were those things. So that sort of aligned well for you on like the coding development, but then you got presented with, oh, I am forced upon the situation that I need to do some writing. What you've done is actually the advice I usually kind of lean towards is, I wouldn't say necessarily turning your weakness into a strength. It is you turned your weakness into basically you're working enough on it to not make it a liability.
I think you're right. And even just maybe part that goes with that is like being willing to be bad at something and not just saying, well, I can't do that, so like it's my weakness, I just can't do it. Like maybe, you know, like I'm not going to be a rocket scientist, so maybe I should, you know, not even try that. But like kind of my nature though is like, if there's something that is, you know, there's information on how to learn about it, or I can find information somewhere or someone, you know, just give it a try and like at least give a crack at it. Because like you could just hire everybody, but like a lot of people that I've seen that just hire people to solve their problems, you know, don't really understand what the value of that person is contributing, or don't understand like what it takes to be good at that particular thing.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I guess if I was to go back to what I think the truism is, I think people should like what I wrote out is like, you know, if they have the energy and the need, it's spend more time on doubling your strengths. Mm-hmm. If you're going to pay any attention to weaknesses, is do enough that it's not a liability, right? Because I do think there are people that potentially almost probably to a fault, like you and me, I think we're a little weird. I don't think we're normal for that reason.
No, but, I think you're right.
But I think what I suffer from in the past, like I was saying in the beginning, it was oftentimes I wanted to turn a weakness into a strength. I almost wanted to flip it on spit because I'd see like, ooh, so-and-so is really good at that. And I could more like that same time and resource allocation, that same brain energy I could have spent, you know, I could have, it was more efficient for me to spend an hour on, you know, math and science and whatever and get 10 times as far versus spending an hour on reading and writing and other stuff that potentially I only get, you know, I don't have the raw talent, right? Or maybe it's like, I don't go as far.
Yeah. And I think over time you kind of, you have to have that trigger, right? Of like, this is really hard and I'm really pushing a boulder up a hill here. Like maybe this is not actually worth me doing it myself. And I think an easy way to check for that is like, am I doing this just because of like my pride and stubbornness? Or like, am I doing this because like, I want to give it a fair shake? And do I truly appreciate what other people's skills are that they could actually do better than me at this? And I think when you kind of look at those things and kind of self-reflect, I find that's a very helpful way. Because like, I find if I'm doing something because it's like I'm enjoying the learning process, like even if I'm not good at it and I'm seeing progress that I am learning, then it's like, yeah, okay, I'll keep going at this for a bit more. But if it's something where it's just like, oh, this is a slog and like, boy, there's someone else that really loves to do this, like, you know, why not just, you know, fork over however much they need to make that work?
Right, right, right. So I do think so, like we're on one case where the decision was either like spend more time because we might be having fun with it, even if we're not good at it, right? Mm. And I would say even for us, like regardless of that, cut ourselves off, we're not alive. Like do enough that we know, right? But I think the other side is the person that is either the other spectrum for someone that is not interested in learning, I would still push them to push yourself hard enough to learn to not be a liability, even if you don't want to do the things. If your default is to go hire someone, I almost feel like you're good at your tie. You're eventually going to have to learn a little bit. So might as well do it early and save yourself some time, save yourself from making the bad hire, wasting money potentially on a consultant that sounds really good, but maybe isn't that good and you aren't skilled enough to know the difference. But I think everyone can get skilled enough. And that's where being a generalist as a business owner, I think you need to be. And I think you're almost, you would save yourself time. So if you are the default hire someone, I would say, hey, maybe you should pump the brakes and like learn a little. I'm not saying you have to do the thing, but also try the job for a week, try the job for 2 days of really what you want, not just, hey, I want this output, but try to make it yourself. Learn how hard it is, learn the nuance of it, and also learn to know, like you'll generate better interview questions for that potential consultant. You'll know the craft better and also have better questions like, what is your process for writing? Because I've struggled with this, right? And then you're going to actually get to like, actually, they really know what they're talking about. But you'll increase your BS meter so that you'll know when they're like, oh, well, you just do this and this. And you're like, yeah, I read that on a blog post too. That's not actually how and you could say, you know, I'm going to skip that person and save myself the pain.
Well, and I think you also get a better appreciation for that person too and the skill that they bring to bear on the particular problem that needs to be done.
Right.
Like, and I think that's really important too, because that really helps your interpersonal relations with people in your company. And that's just better for everybody, right? I think on the, you know, playing to your strength side too, I think we all like to be good at something. And so I think that when you are good at something and you, you know, enjoy, you know, doing that craft, I think you do just, you know, lean into that, right? And, you know, learn new things that go along with that craft and get better at it. I think, yeah, you gotta, I think there's this tendency to say, oh, I just, you know, my day job and I just, you know, do the grind and whatever. And like, if you know, maybe that is your case, you know, maybe you don't like your job very much, but if you can find a way to, you know, have some happiness in your craft and, you know, just have joy in it, right? Like it makes things go so much better and you start to improve just by being there and just trying. It doesn't really take a lot of effort because it comes naturally. You're good at it. You like it. You know, and life is good for you that way.
No, it's actually good. It almost leads me to my other topic. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I think the other truth, right, is this sort of, and maybe it aligns both with this, and maybe as much as the double strengths, I think people know the double strengths, and maybe this was more about like, don't overdo your weakness and try to turn it into a strength, but do enough, whether you like it or not. But aside from that, I think is like that going where the energy is, right? So you have this, I think you brought up some really good points also just about just, you know, finding your joy in that craft. And I think that's a challenge I'm wondering too about people lately, like, especially if you, you know, it's not necessarily always the best to just listen to everyone complaining on like LinkedIn and social media. but it's easy to see a lot of people, I think, are just like lacking energy, you know, questioning things. They're like, a lot of people in the tech world, I think, are struggling with like, you know, job placements and getting back to where it was a few years ago and where they felt like there was more energy, right? They felt like they enjoyed their career. They enjoyed their craft. They enjoyed the people they were working with. Everyone was, you know, advancing. Everyone was sharing tactics. Everyone was getting raises. Less people were, you know, struggling with, you know, finding job placement. I think it's interesting, and it's interesting to see, like, you know, people on like maybe losing their way with that sort of energy.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something there where, like, with COVID and all that, like, I think people kind of checked out from work in some senses, where they're just like, oh, work is annoying, and like, I don't really want to do this. And yeah, the financial implications of that too. But I think a lot of that is like, I think there's a lot of self-reflection that needs to happen. Like, you don't always intrinsically get joy from doing your work, and sometimes you have to search for it. And maybe you are kind of misplacing your hopes too, right? Like, maybe your hope is that you're going to be like a bazillionaire, and like, that's not happening because, you know, you're not getting the next raise or the next promotion or whatever. And it's, I think, like, sometimes we need to be content with our place in life. You know, not that you can never get better or something like that, but like, just do the best you can where you are and, you know, see where that takes you. You know, maybe you do need to find a new job or something like that. There's always a place for that. But I think we definitely overemphasize, oh, I'm getting paid more. That's what makes a difference in my life. And it's like, well, you know, if you're already making above a certain threshold, like, I think there's a study is like, if you make over 70K, it doesn't really make much of a difference if you get a big raise. Yeah, sure, you get, you know, a nicer car or something. But yeah, just, you know, just where the work that you have in front of you, just do it the best you can. Try to find things that are fun to do with it.
Yeah, I think that a lot of this is just, for me, I think it's the shift from where everything was in overabundance now to where things feel like, okay, you've got to find the true, like, sort of spark, right? Was it because like, I was getting raises and like upping my standard of living, or was it because I really enjoyed the craft? And maybe you used to enjoy the craft, but then you moved into management and then you realized that, and it's like, actually, maybe the thing is you need to step back and find the love again, find the craft that you enjoyed. So I think, and it's happening for businesses too, right? So it's not just like, it's the whole like, hey, year of efficiency, 20 people in their marketing team, and now it's down to 5. And now what I think the reality check on the finding the things that we talked about, and this kind of relates to both to the double the strengths and stuff too, is like, I see more companies and people in this juxtaposition of like, where things were in abundance, where things were cheap, and also everyone was like trying to do everything. And now it's like, let's whittle that back down to the core, right? So for businesses, to me, it means like, what was your company actually good at and that you liked doing? Not when you had abundance of resources and you tried to do every social media platform. Like, what was the core thing? And work on those strengths. What is the stuff that's actually still effective? Spend more time doubling those, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a good way to kind of, for companies to find their way again. And like you said, for people to find their way again, maybe it's okay to like, hey, maybe I went from a 6-figure salary and I have to go to like a, you know, a high five figure salary, and like, but it means I'm rediscovering my craft and reinventing myself. And like, you know, I might have to, you know, swallow my pride a bit for a minute, but then, hey, you know what? I might be much better off. I might be much happier being a great copywriter versus a manager of five copywriters. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, I think everyone is doing like this sort of gut check, but I think that nice guidance is like, well, find that joy, find the strengths, find those things. And yeah. I don't know, a little soapboxy, but you know.
Well, it's all good. I think a lot of this though is like, there are times when you see, you know, friends and whatever that are struggling with these things. And I think it's worth, you know, talking about them. And it is our podcast after all, so we can say what we want.
It's true. But I'm seeing more and more of these trends. If I think about the people that, and the businesses that are doing well, right? Mm-hmm. Like they do seem to be enjoying themselves, right? So like there's something to that. And there was one, it's funny. Are you familiar with Scott Galloway? Have you ever seen?
Vaguely.
So like I heard him on a podcast, and one thing that was interesting that he said that you wouldn't have thought of, he's like, and he mentioned in terms of strengths and weaknesses, he's like, I'm not good one-on-one, which is kind of strange. He's like, I'm good in a crowd. I'm good speaking. Like that's my superpower. And I enjoy that. He's like, even to the point where, you know, he has to do, you know, business meetings, he brings an entourage. And almost to the point of like, because he's better in a crowd versus like one-on-one. He like avoids the one-on-ones because he doesn't think he's good at it. And it's like, or he doesn't get joy out of it. I don't know what it is, but he's like, hey, these are my strengths. So I just lean into those. I do public speaking. I do these things. I go on this stuff. Like I'm good at that, but I'm not good at, you know, one-on-one relationships. So I don't even bother with those. I'm not good at them. And then if you look at someone like, you know, I look a lot at, Spark Toro and Rand Fishkin Amanda Natividad but it's like, they look like they're all having fun and they do all this content. There's other stuff that they may not do every checkbox correct on sort of like, you know, the list of stuff, but they, I think, enjoy content. They enjoy the social media side. They enjoy, you know, the type of content they produce is very relatable. Those are talents that they have, and writing very clearly, you know, their writing is epic, and it's sort of like, they're just leaning into the strengths. And that I think is the Spark Toro brand. And it's like, they're not doing SEO, right? As much as maybe Rand, you know, has a chip on his shoulder, but just a big like rage against sort of like big machine. So he doesn't lean into that. And it's like, it would probably pain him to do that. So he's leaning into his joy and his skill and business need and that alignment. And like asking you to do that, like to be Rand Fishkin, like that's not who you want to be or what you may have skill, and me neither, right? Like I'm not the same way either. So I think there's giving ourselves those graces of like saying, yeah, these are great. And everyone's like, you should do this. You should do social media. You should do all this thing. It's like, yeah, but if I don't enjoy them, like maybe I understand them to a point and maybe I'll hire someone if I have the resources. But at the same time, like I said, knowing enough that that isn't a liability, or really leaning into your, you know, your true strengths and stuff instead. So,
yeah, I feel like the older you get, the more of these things you come across, where it's like, you know, it's neat to see all these people doing things on social and they're, you know, really good at whatever it is. And, you know, just to be comfortable being yourself, right? And just, you know, you look for the ways that you can grow, but like, you don't have to be like everybody else, right? And, you know, you can go to those people who are really good at particular things to try and learn, but it's like, I don't have to be that person, right? I can, you know, kind of work in my own lane, right?
Yeah, because I think it's just going to be painful if that's not a natural thing. Before we, as we wrap up, the personal example I had that is not a business one was from handball. You know, in handball, you have to use both your hands, like in terms of like throwing and hitting the ball with your left hand and throwing and hitting the ball with your right hand.
Sure.
And for the longest time, I was infatuated with the idea of my left hand being as effective and as strong as my right hand. The reality is it never will be. I am not ambidextrous. Maybe, and I almost feel like anyone that says they're ambidextrous, I don't think there's it's not. I don't know if there's 100% truth. There are people. There's exceptions to it. There's bat. Yeah. You know, there's baseball players that can bat from both sides and throw from both sides. But the batting may be okay, but maybe like the pitching, there's like rarely been a switch pitcher in life. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't. You know, there's only so many reps, so they could only do so many things. But my point is, it was more. You know, before I kind of leaned more into, yes, I'm right-handed, right? It changed kind of my perspective of like, and a lot of people approach the game from not making it a liability, like have a defensive left. So it does not, like someone doesn't hit it to your left and you just miss the ball, right? Like,
sure,
you have to be good enough to not be a liability. But I pained myself for a very long time trying to develop my left and spending an inordinate amount of time knowing it would never be a 10 out of 10. Like I thought it could be. So it's like sort of that like flip side of you and me saying we can do anything and almost a bullheadedness. Mm-hmm. But it ended up once I flipped that bit and was like, you know what? I've developed it. It's like a 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And any more time, I'm never going to get it to a 10 out of 10. So like 7 is still great, but yeah. And it took a lot. I grinded out from maybe like a 3 to a 7 versus, you know, let's say my right hand is like a 9 out of 10 or something. But It's interesting because it's like I said, it caused me so much pain to do that. And I just want to help maybe people avoid that, like the hot takes of people saying like, oh, you should be like Van Fishkin. You should be like Gary Vee. You should be like Jason Lemkin. You should be like all these other people, but they have an internal thing, which there was also a great Jason Lemkin article where podcast episode, which we should link in the show notes, where he talks about writing as his love and super skill set, which you can see now. Like you can see his content and his blog and all that stuff. But he's like, that takes him, that's his platform to do the things. And you can see where that has written, that's what makes Saster. Anyway, that's sort of, you know, if he spent more time trying to be like, you know, a Scott Galloway, where it might be different, right? Or something like that. They leaned into their strengths. So all the great ones out there just like, you know, lean into their strengths and probably make their, like limit their liabilities. So
there we go. Wisdom from Josh on his soapbox.
Yeah. Out of it. Hope it's helpful and that you don't go into the pain of overdoing. That's more of like is overdoing on the weaknesses, is I think the,
yeah.
The,
maybe don't overdo it, and you aren't ambidextrous. That's what I get.
Thanks. Anyway, all right. Anything else on the on your mind, Nate?
That's all for today.
Okay. All right.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher, and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.